So hello and welcome to Uncle's Data podcast. And this time on our podcast, we have a guest from Lithuanian e-commerce company, Barbora. And it's Andrius Didžiulis, with whom we're going to talk about, you know, their data team structures, ways of working, you know, and all of the, basically everything, you know, data team related. But before, you know, we continue to ways of working, you know, so maybe Andrius, you could give your introduction about yourself.
Mm-hmm. Hello, everyone. As I was introduced, I'm Andrius, head of data from Barbora. Already 5 years in Barbora. It's the longest time I'm working somewhere in my career, and that's in a particular place. So, yeah, it's been a long ride and really exciting. Talking maybe about myself. I'm a really like avid traveler. It's close to 50 countries now I've visited. And I still hope my dream is to visit every continent, at least one country in every continent. What else? Sports. Basketball was my main activity, main sport for majority of my life. But recently, a few years ago, we decided to quit that. Just too painful to continue. It's just a too brutal sport for me. And now I'm mostly into jogging, Pilates. It's really good when you're sitting all day and then after the day, just go to, you know, to work with your back, do various stretching. So it's really a great activity that I just discovered. And also my latest hobby is dancing. Salsa, bachata. I should, like my girlfriend should take a credit for that, I guess. But I really enjoy that. Already been to a few camps, also attended a few socials, like socialist so-called gathering where you dance with people there. I try to, you know, mix my, like I kind of find new activities, things to do, and you know, somehow get away from job, from computer, and all that.
So basically, go off the grid, right, for some time.
Yeah, just go off. Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's a good saying.
Okay. Okay. Continue. Sorry.
Yeah, for a long time, I would say my main hobby was just, you know, sit after the work hours and just continue my work, improve, you know, learn something new, but. Probably I'm in this stage of my life where I just want, you know, to start enjoying life, I guess. And just, you know, yeah, it's really, really great to be in such stage of my life. And, you know, still healthy and happy and all that.
Okay. Any plans to visit Antarctica? Because technically it's a continent, but doesn't have a country.
Nope. Yeah, it's 8,000 euros. You can go to. I've been to it like this last winter. I went to the place where you can where all the expeditions start to Antarctica. It's in Chile. I explored a lot that opportunity. It's pretty expensive, but doable. Maybe, yeah, before that, I need to visit Africa, you know, I need to visit Australia and that.
Warmer countries, right?
Yeah, warmer countries. And then I can go there.
Okay. So, like you mentioned, you know, yeah, you're now at Barbora for like almost like 5 years, right? So how did you end up there, right? Because if I remember correctly, right, you started like, you know, in economics. I know, like, you know, started in a bit different area, then you kind of see, you know, a switch, right? Where you switch to data scientists, right? So how did that happen?
It started in, in the first course of my studies in economics, when I realized that I don't like economics. I want to work with IT, with data more, like big data, like some kind of, you know, technologies that you could, you know, programmatically, basically develop, program, not like, you know, study macro, microeconomics, you know, all that. Statistics was good. Like, I really enjoy statistics, although I wasn't really successful there. But I enjoyed it. It was something new. But at that time, I did not realize. I thought I want to be in IT. So I went to Students Union, done a lot of projects there with IT, not IT, partied a lot. Actually, basically, I wasted my bachelor's degree. Finished that, then decided to go to work as an IT project manager to learn more about IT. It was really like tough work, learned a lot about various aspects of IT projects, which I actually truly now I appreciate that when I'm like head of data, I need to like manage data projects and just overall, you know, work with IT, like all that. And yeah, but eventually I just said that, okay, I need to you know, have some kind of academic knowledge about what I'm doing here. So yeah, I then went to the US to study data science there. Really good in university, a lot of work, like 6-7 days, 10-12 hours per day of studies, various academic work. And after that, yeah, just, you know, it kind of naturally went from IT to data. My capstone project, so the last project in my studies was to make some kind, like a kind of a natural language processing algorithm that understands the clinical data and kind of assembles it in a proper data model. So yeah, it was like my first big project in that area, in machine learning, in AI. And from there, I just started. I came back to Lithuania. I did not like American life. And yeah, from there it started. I basically then, it was a few companies. There were a few companies before I came to Barbara.
Okay. So I guess, you know, during those 5 years, right, you saw a lot of different things and a lot of different changes, you know. You know, in regards, you know, to the data teams, you know, and how the company evolved. Because in general, yes. I think the company itself is like 9 or 10 years old, right? Somewhere there.
So yeah.
Half of the time you're there.
Yes, I like we'll soon be 10 years old, I think next year, if I'm right. I hope I'm right. But yes, I came at the stage where the company was still, let's say, young, startup. Yeah, startup. Now, like during COVID, we became I would say, really mid-level, mid-sized company with more than a few thousand employees. And yeah, now after COVID, we had to rethink, you know, also downsize a bit. But yeah, it also was a kind of, I always say, three stages that I faced. So one is that early one, then that great times and COVID, and then now we are like trying to be a sustainable business, which can, you know, which in commerce is really hard to do. It's really a challenging business and really hard to be profitable.
Mm-hmm. So did you uncover, you know, some best practices, let's say, you know, how to form a team, like a data team, right? Is there a magic formula on your end?
Well, my main recipe, well, that may sound like too easy, but my main recipe is to probably just to be honest with yourself and with the people around you, be open and also tell everyone about your plans and what you want to do, you know, just communicate. I think it's universal for all teams. You just need to, once we decided we want to have data team, we needed to understand where we should start first from. Then, you know, once the team, when the team grew, you know, we got like some people, we needed to prove that, you know, those people are doing the job, you know, like we needed to understand that we are not like too big or too small. So it's always like, you know, talking to people around you, talking to your colleagues, talking to your managers, and just, you know, see, trying to get capture their you know, focus, maybe their opinion about you, about your team, their questions, try to answer their question, and just, you know, kind of, you know, flow, proving you that your team is what, you know, what brings the value, like proving that the team brings the value to the company. And yeah, and at the same time, you also have to be really open and honest with your teammates, with people that you're working with in the team, you know, about if they're, you know, if they want to, if they see that they want to work with some like particular technologies or products, you have to, you know, put some energy into that they would take this. Or like if they want to be, you know, they want to build a like recommendation engine, then you know, your goal as a team manager to make that happen. So, and at the same time, you know, if they feel that they don't have enough work, you need to find that work. And simply if they have too much work, you have to take some work off their shoulders. So it's just, you know, dealing with everyday questions. It's no big secret, no like one universal recipe, just, you know, trying to behave with everyone in the same way you hope they will behave with you. So it's like nothing
magic. Okay. Yeah, that's true. Like, you know, like I like the thing, you know, when you ask someone, you know, from the data in general, like some question, usually the answer, you know, is always like, it depends, you know. So like in your case, right, it also depends, you know, on this, on that, on this, you know. So okay. So one of the things, you know, what's always interesting, you know, to me, you know, is how other companies, right, they're creating their own hiring structure, right? Because like one of the ideas, you know, why I started doing this kind of a, like this season in general, part of it was in Lithuanian, right? Is like to get the listeners, you know, a basic understanding of what they could expect, you know, from the interview, you know, what are the, you know, the steps and phases, right? And what kind of like team expects, you know, like soft skills or like even hard skills, you know, to have. So what about Barbara, right? How does the interview process look like?
Mm-hmm. So yeah, we usually have two, three stages in that process. First of all, it's like general, let's say filtering, the general screening. Our recruiter talks to the candidates, evaluates their competence, and then chooses a number of them to proceed with the second stage, which is interview with me or with a team lead. So like, yeah, we need to talk about the structure of our teams. So yeah, it's like our data team is basically made up of two teams, is data science and data engineering team. I'm also, together with being a head of data, I'm also currently a lead data engineer. Also there's my colleague, Thomas, working as a head of, as a lead data scientist. So yeah, in the second stage, the lead of the team talks to the candidate, each candidate that is selected for the second stage. And the third stage, usually it's like kind of everyone that talks with the lead also gets to the third stage, which is homework, which is like practical like task to you know, to test your knowledge, your professional knowledge, your technical knowledge. Mm-hmm. And that could be really diverse, like that could be really, like we have different tasks for different, project. Like usually we aim at the particular project that candidate, that position will take over, that data scientist or data engineer will will take over, and the task is usually directly related to that. So if you need to build a, team wants you to work with recommendation systems, then usually you'll get something to do with the recommendation system in your own work.
Okay, so basically you're tailoring the task, you know, to the position, so the candidate could actually, you know, understand what he can, you know, wait when he starts, you know.
Yes.
Okay, cool. That makes sense. Like the usual question is like, you know, any particular, you know, soft skills you're looking at in the candidates, right? What actually, you know, from the soft skill set, right, matters, you know, for you, for the company, for the team.
Mm-hmm. So what I really value is the that self-starting mindset. Like once you get to the team, you like the initial stage of like getting used to the getting all the tools and, you know, accesses all that. We strive that to be as fast as possible. And you know, we had some cases where when people, you know, newcomers start working with on their main project next week, like 1 week after they joined the team, and they have full responsibility and freedom in like deciding many aspects of that product. Yeah, of course, like there's like kind of business requirements, like expectation, what we want, what Barbora wants from that product. But when coming to, you know, to deciding like technical things, like technical like path of how you will achieve that, those goals, it's really full responsibility with, you know, with the support from colleagues. And it's we have those, you know, quarterly goals that are set also soon after you join the team. And then you have like I just, you know, want to be, I don't want to intrude, like just, you know, want to let it go. Constantly we are monitoring, you know, like we can talk about that later through the process, you know, agile process, to see how, where you stand. But in the end, like autonomy, self-starting skills, initiative is what I really team and the company values. And I feel that, yeah, it's like it creates the best environment for a developer, for a colleague to excel and achieve the goal.
Mm-hmm. So basically you're getting full freedom, you know, and also choosing, you know, approaches, you know, that which actually, you know, makes sense for people, you know, because they can see themselves grow and apply, you know, different things, and if there is need, you know, to consult with their colleagues. Cool. Okay. That makes sense. And then, you know, let's say, you know, the process, you know, like finishes successfully, right? The person is hired. So how does the first weeks, right? Or like a couple of months, you know, looks like when the person starts, right? Basically the onboarding process.
Mm-hmm. So my goal is to make it as quick as possible. So that, you know, the end goal is that the person feels like he or she is here for like a year already. I heard a lot of feedback we are succeeding in that. Just, you know, like all the, you know, a lot of automated stuff, a lot of processes described, you know, we just, the person comes, joins the team, and you just, you know, like 10, 11, 12 steps you need to complete, and the person has everything that he or she needs. So once we're done with those basics, then we talk about the project that we talk during the interview process, or a few projects if it's it actually really depends on the competence as well. Like with juniors, we will start maybe with a few projects, smaller ones, and then we'll go to the bigger one with a mid or senior. It could be that, you know, straight into the, just maybe a small project to understand our data structures, our data, and then, you know, straight into a bigger project. And that could be, I guess, the end of first project could be the end of the onboarding, I guess. Every project also, like we have overall as a team, we have a lot of autonomy. in our IT infrastructure, let's say that. So people, what is really important to know that our colleagues know a lot of things about, you know, DevOps, like data ops, let's say. Data engineer could know like or could need, will need may need to do some work with you know, machine learning engineering, or data scientists could do some data engineering work. It's not like a prime, like a, it would be like 10, maybe 15% of the time, but like the essence of the team is like it kind of naturally evolved that the team our team was like we from like the Barbora, like I could say the secret that Barbora and our kind of experience with cloud started with data team. So firstly, we as data team were the first starters of the cloud technologies, and then the remaining part of IT joined us and continued working with the cloud. So as a result, we needed to do a lot of things by ourselves because nobody else could help us. So yeah, that's why we like some like knowledge kind of we developed, we got some knowledge about the cloud. And yeah, now we have DevOps, we have people who can help us, but still, you know, we expect that Terraform, like people, like data engineers know what Terraform is and can do some stuff with it. So that, I think, something that distinguishes us from other teams, but at the same time, it really helps us be fast. We don't need to wait for other teams, and we just do, you know, people really enjoy that. You know, you can do the whole project sometimes, or like usually you can do the whole project from the beginning to the very end by your own, like wait, only by the like with your colleagues in the team. No need for knowledge out from outside.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it also falls, you know, what you mentioned of the autonomy part, right? Mm-hmm. Because you have the team in general, everyone has values, you know, and the as a team as a whole, you know, then you can do, you know, things on your own. Okay. Since you mentioned cloud, you know, and these things, you know, so I guess, you know, for me, it's where my, you know, most of the experience comes, you know, from the engineering, you know, technical things, right? So can you, you know, elaborate more, you know, on what tools are you using, you know, the day-to-day?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so our main cloud is AWS. It was like, it started, why we chose AWS, just during my capstone project in the master's, I worked with AWS. And yeah, as I said, we started, I actually took this choice, this decision to go with AWS. And I'm really happy that the manager supported that. And yeah, we, from there, we got and started to work with AWS. And we're still happy with that decision. Then what else? Python is the main language, programming language. Yeah, SQL, it's the, that, we are now actually kind of shifting it would mean with far that we use this Athena, like which is Presto SQL, SQL. Now we got wiser and we are shifting to Redshift. So Redshift SQL will soon be the main data SQL language. Then what else? Yeah, Terraform, as I said. Yeah, Git, all that. Also, DBT is the thing that we wanted to like for it to kind of deploy for our analysts. So it's like one of the projects that we want to do to work on with.
Kind of like similar stack, I guess. You know, in different places, exactly similar. You know, just the database engine is basically different. So, yeah, interesting choice on the Redshift. So, I'm gonna probably, you know, follow up with you after some time, you know, to see how it's going, because it's very interesting to me hear that, because like in my previous companies we had, you know, experience with Redshift and basically migrated to different vendor. Mm-hmm. So gonna be interested to see, you know, what's your journey, you know, using like moving from one to another, you know, and how it's gonna happen. But I guess, you know, we can talk about that in different podcast episode if that's and see, you know, how it went. So okay, yeah, so we talked about technical part, right? And you mentioned about the process and, you know, agile way, right? So let's get back to that question, like, you know, the topic you mentioned, right? So how's the work in general, you know, organizing the teams?
Mm-hmm. So yeah, we say and we believe in Agile, and we usually follow Scrum practices. So yeah, all that sprint planning, retrospectives, all this. It's not like easy to do that in a data team. Our sprint consists of many projects and many tasks that are not really related. So we don't have this sprint goal, for example. Only now, maybe when we have some time, to work with that Redshift project, let's say, we really kind of try to be more work closer. But it's still, with data team, it's a challenge. We say that we have Scrum, we have standups, we see value in that. We've constantly tried to, to kind of pivot and get something new, maybe look from the other angle, maybe sometimes mix with Kanban. But it's overall, let's say 60-70% of the time it's Scrum, and we see value in that, and we kind of try to make it our way. And also, one thing that's important, that we constantly need to, review what we do, whether that works or not. So with the help of team members, external people, experts, we kind of evaluate what we have here and whether those practices are really working. And that's really important. Otherwise, it was we already had a few years ago. We derived from that Agile Scrum principles, those Scrum principles, and it was not good. Just you have it, but you don't have it. You just it's a kind of fake Scrum. It's really important to do those things that work, but not those things that just kind of history or practice or you the kind of habit that you have, but that does not work at all.
Okay. I'm going to circle back a bit, to the question, since you mentioned your teams, a couple of teams, right? Engineering, right? And data science. And you mentioned that you're working, kind of in a project base, right? So I assume, on the project, you have a cross-functional team, right? Which is working on, certain things,
Yes.
How does that work, on your end, how to prioritize, one project over the other, right? Because again, assumption that multiple people, are spread on across different projects, right? So they have different priorities, different parts to play, different tasks to complete, right? So how, let's start with, the sizes of, teams at this point, mm-hmm. right? And then basically, how you, decide the prioritizations of those tasks or projects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the teams are cross-functional, and usually to complete the project, although we're some projects, a lot of projects, we still have a lot of projects where it's enough to have data team, as there are many things to do. But recently a few last years, we understood the value of cross-functional teams and cross-functional work, where you start with the business idea, with the business, requirements, and you finish, you go for that cycle, and come with the actual product, recommendations, product recommendations. So we have that, but it's not in a way that you can imagine, that you have constant meetings where those cross-functional people are agreeing, talking together, deciding what to do next. It's it happens, but usually the way we do it's we together with either cross-functional team managers, we decide we evaluate the scope, we understand exact patterns, how it works, and then we split the work, and then we do that in our teams. So IT does it, it's in, front-end team does it in its own team. Its part, it does its part in its own team. We do our part in our own team, and then we come back, in a few weeks to align to see whether that works or not, and then we go back, continue the work. So it's mix of that, it's not like fully cross-functional teamwork, as I understand, as I believe that you should have. Like, we actually, we thought and we're still thinking about, you know, future could be like that cross-functional team where, you know, every team assigns, so like a kind of there are representatives from a team which, you know, come to this cross-functional team to work on a particular project. But for now, let's say it's not like it's not like that. We are like we see in this current model where like teams are more like represent themselves in that particular project. We see this advantages here in that sense that you know, it helps to shift like a kind of switch between people. If someone is not available at that moment, then we go to other, you know, person in that team to work on that project. Also, the rotation sometimes is really cruel, and you know, some people are leaving, some people are joining. So that's why we need to adapt to that, and it's kind of, I guess, one of the main reasons why we are employing this, and it's just because of the resources. You know, so like it's really like people are changing. IT market is really demanding and competitive. So that's why we need to change, and we want to keep that knowledge inside the team, not like put it in somewhere in a kind of cross-functional team. So that's why it's like that. And yeah, we usually just discuss that project internally, what we need to do, and then work on that. Yeah, maybe talking about the team, talking about the sizes of teams, let's say engineering and data science. So we try to keep that one to two, like one data scientist to two data engineers.
Not the other way around.
So yeah, we one data scientist to two, three data engineers. I guess it's like that. It's usually, why is it so, like 20% of the work usually is data science, 80% of the work is data engineering. Like we also do a lot of work with machine learning engineering. And I believe, yeah, like we also want to have such roles. So yeah, data scientists, the way we understand it, the way like the literature understands it and the people overall that practice it, is that they just need to, you know, research the products, build an algorithm, a model, and a general idea how the problem should be solved. And then everything is just left, the actual implementation is left to machine learning engineer, and the whole infrastructure is left to data engineer. So this is the way how we understand, and that's why, yeah, data scientists, we have only a few data scientists in the team. Mostly we have data engineers.
Yeah, okay, so now it all makes sense, right? Because usually, at least in Lithuania, right, data scientist, you know, covers like the 80% of the work, right? Analytics part and whatnot. And in your case, it's more like actual data science, right? Building models, you know, verifying them, you know, correctness and whatnot.
Yes.
Okay. That it falls into place and it actually makes sense. So kudos on having that, because, you know, everywhere else is like, you know, everyone is a data scientist, you know, doing data engineering, analytics, and then basically, you know,
it's really hard to persuade, like to prove that to business. With data engineers, we had some hard times, and now with machine learning engineers, it's honestly like a really hard task to explain what that position does, how it contributes to business, to the final product, and why data scientist or data engineer could not do that. It's just, you know, like when I was in the US and I worked a bit as a machine learning engineer, participated in some projects, it was really like easy to, it was kind of like implicitly you understood that, you know, it's like everybody understood what the role is and, you know, how it works. And seeing like a machine learning engineer position in job ads, it was a kind of, and still is, it's like a natural, like practice, everyone understands. But yeah, here we have this, let's say it's not like a drawback, I would say it's a kind of a feature of a country, of a market that's still young, you know, and data science in Lithuania is still young. I would say like 10 years old at most, maybe a bit more, but we're 15 years, I guess. So where, you know, you have exact, you have understanding about the roles, about the whole like flow of data product cycle, how it should be developed, and, you know, good practices. So yeah, I guess it's a great time to be, it's a good time to be in this market and, you know, participate and try to kind of shape it and shape the minds of business and understanding, form the understanding about how data teams are working.
Yeah, that actually makes sense, right? Because people, like from the business side, right, if you're opening a position, right, it actually, you know, adds more costs, right? And you have to, you know, show, you know, what value it will bring, you know, how to outweigh it and whatnot. And I guess, you know, the like last couple of years, like I think three when the corona started, right, basically everyone understood, you know, the power of data. And basically now it's a bit easier to do it, like than compared, like, I don't know, 6-7 years ago. So that's a bit easier on the side. Okay, sounds like you're running quite nice, you know, setup at this point. So for me, another interesting thing is, you know, to understand, you know, so how do you kind of ensure, you know, working standards or like, you know, best practices across different projects, right? Across different, you know, teammates, you know, in general, you know, mm-hmm. how to avoid the big dump, you know, working with a lot of data from different mm-hmm. sources.
Yeah, it's a really good question. I actually yesterday I spent some time thinking about that. It's just, you know, we try to, well, what I noted. Yeah, somewhere, but I'm not sure if I have it. Yeah, just to remember all my notes, all my ideas. But yeah, first of all, refinements are the critical thing. I never, like before Barbara, I never thought that just, you know, repeating and telling the same thing again and again can make such a big difference. You know, just, you know, you have first view when you approach the problem, then you have the second view and opinion when you start digging into that, and the third idea and like third set of ideas when you, you know, refine it. And then once you start developing like the fourth one, it's like constant like comeback to the problem, to the product, and refining it. It's what it helps to understand the general, you know, like how you can approach it. And then on the way, you also agree on practices, on, you know, whether you need documentation or not. Sometimes, you know, it's too small, you don't need that documentation, but usually it's like, when you're thinking a lot about it, you need some kind of document, like some kind of manual, which we will, you know, others will use, or even business sometimes reads and understands even more. Also you need to agree with everyone about the structure of the project and the parts, you know, that it's not only code, it's also, you know, unit tests, it's also, you know, Terraform, that you need to think about, and the infrastructure, you know, the where you place your configs. It's not like in a file or some kind of, you know, place nobody knows about, or like some like a new place, you know, like you invent a new place where to store the configs. No, it's like you always have to agree together with everyone about what you will do, where you place each part of your project and each part of the code. And then, you know, everyone should follow that. Yes, it eventually builds a kind of flow that is really like looks kind of time consuming, or like it feels like a kind of a burden to many. But, you know, it's a habit. I believe that once you develop this habit, you're like you become really tidy, and everyone understands. And, you know, it's just like you can, without explaining much, you can say that, you know, that the guy leaves the team, and the other, the new one joins, or the someone, the colleague takes over the project, and he knows or she knows that where to go or to look at project, or already may know and already may, you know, see, understand where everything is put and left, so he can start they can start immediately working on that project. So yeah, like as a head of data, I need to ensure that you know, we don't have any kind of every piece of our idea, every piece of our product should have its own place. And yeah, you cannot leave anything somewhere in the files, Excel files, Jupyter notebooks, or just, you know, Python file. So yeah, it's also a challenge.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm thinking then, you know, in general, right? Barbara belongs, you know, to a big group, you know, and like, so for me, one of the questions in general, right, is about the options, you know, for like vertical or horizontal, you know, growth opportunities, you know, for, you know, data team members, right? So what's the, you know, what's possible, you know, in Barbara, you know, in general, you know, like growth opportunities, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we are a part of the group. I think, yeah, the biggest retail group in the Baltics. So if we're talking about vertical growth, it's like limitless, especially if you are like willing to, you know, to leave the technical world and go to you know, managerial acquisitions. And it's well accepted. We have examples in a company where, you know, developers, like people from different, you know, play, let's say, professions, joined, you know, managers and all that. So we encourage that in a team itself. We have like two, three levels of like the two to three levels, like let's say from junior to mid to senior and then to lead. And yeah. I guess head or even more. It's not like we are saying never. Like myself, I also see a few options for myself in the future in the group. So yeah, we have these vertical steps. And talking about horizontal, it's like say that in two ways, like that professional development. So we encourage that, you know, learning new technologies, expanding your knowledge, not only about the cloud that we have, AWS, but also the cloud that, you know, you may face in the future. So we are currently actually working and have opportunities and actual credits to work with Google Cloud, also Azure Cloud. So like for data engineers, there are opportunities for data scientists. Like we see, we don't use deep learning currently. It's like, we feel that it's a big gap for us, and we want to learn, and people are actually learning, you know, taking courses to learn that. And I'm sure that we'll soon use that knowledge to, you know, developing our products. So yeah, learning, I guess, understanding your craft is one way. And the other way is the learning about company and business. I would say it's also kind of horizontal. We have this initiative where people are going and are encouraged constantly to go to work in the front, let's say front office. So it's pickers and couriers. We have this program where you can spend a day in a picking center, you know, collect items, you know, look at work, go together with the courier, deliver products, and, you know, in this way, see what are the, you know, if you feel any, there are some problems, then you can face that and come back and find a solution. So, yeah, it's also some kind of learning, some kind of horizontal, I guess, growth. Overall, like many resources, like e-learning resources to help you with different problems, issues, courses, and all that. So
okay,
you just need your time. We also have a 1 day per week where you can spend time the whole day for your own initiative. So let's say I recently spent the whole day just, you know, to build a service that that streams kind of shows our statistical dashboards on TVs, like on TV sets in the office. Mm-hmm. Others are working with with Google Cloud, trying learning courses. So it's like, yeah, you get to spend the whole day just only for that, and it works also. It delivers some value.
Yeah, I guess what to mention and what I kind of admire, that actually teaming up, like the delivery part, right? Actually, going through the process and dog fooding, a whole end to end, right? It gives a better perspective and you understand your product better, all the bits and pieces, see what doesn't make sense to you in general, right? So actually then you can contribute, on like making the what's for everyone else is like not obvious, like they're used to it, right? You get a different perspective each time. So that's really cool.
Exactly.
Okay. I guess from that side, from my end, basically no more questions apart from the one and last one, So what would be the book, you would recommend, to the listeners?
I really admire the series of clean code, clean coder, and clean infrastructure by Uncle Bob. We all know him, Robert C. Martin. Yes, I don't even know his full name. It's Uncle Bob.
You're right on the name.
I used to look at the clean code. Now I'm looking more at clean coder. There are a lot of good practices. For me as a manager, actually. It gives you all the main things about the work, following standard conventions, finding the root cause of your problem, and just leaving everything as it is, as you got to before, coming to the code. A lot of great ideas there, and also constantly give this this recommendation, and say this to our newcomers, that when we have this 1 month usually before coming to the work to our team. So just if you want to get ready for the team, please read at least one book, Clean Code, you'll be ready. So yeah, it's a classic and a good read and a good way to remember later what is it all about.
Yeah, that actually makes sense, right? And if you're setting the standard or the cornerstones of the team, and making those practices one of the cornerstones, it actually helps everyone blend in faster, understand things more efficiently and whatnot. Cool. So thank you for recommendation. Thank you for spending your time with me talking about the data teams and how it's going on for you, and was very nice talking to you. And for the listeners, tune in to next episodes of Uncle Data and see you there.